Thank you for taking the time to listen to this message from Stonebridge United Methodist Church. We hope it encourages you to live and love like Jesus.
And so I'll open with the scripture reading, which will be from 1 Peter. And so this begins us in our Advent series. So will you listen for the word of the Lord? Although you have seen him, you love him. Speaking of Jesus. And even though you do not see him now, you believe in him and rejoice with an indescribable and glorious joy. For you are receiving the outcome of your faith, the salvation of your souls. Therefore, prepare your minds for action. Discipline yourselves. Set all your hope on the grace that Jesus Christ will bring you when he is revealed. Like obedient children, do not be conformed to the desires that you formerly had in ignorance. Instead, as he who called you is holy, be holy yourselves in all your conduct. For it is written, you shall be holy, for I am holy. So today is the first Sunday of Advent. We've already mentioned that. So it is today's New Year's Day. A lot of folks don't know that in the Christian calendar, New Year's begins with the first Sunday of Advent. We don't begin our new year on Christmas Day, because if you've ever been around anybody having children, you know that it begins with anticipation and expectation and preparation and hope that precedes the birth. So we begin with Advent, which the word means literally waiting. So we are waiting, we are preparing for the coming of the Christ child, for the coming of the Messiah. And so that's what Advent is. That's what we anticipate and why we light one candle a Sunday in the Advent wreath. But of course, we live in a place, in a culture that wants to rush Christmas. Right? I mean, sometime around Labor Day, some people start putting up Christmas decorations. There's a house across the street from our house that has had Christmas lights up for weeks now. So part of that, I know, the rush to get Christmas started is some people just love Christmas so much, you just can't wait. You're as soon as the temperatures get below 80, you're ready to go. And so let's start Christmas. Part of it, of course, is driven by retail. So we have that going on as well when things start showing up in the stores very early on. So there's this rush to start Christmas. And yet there's also, these days, a cultural push against Christmas. I mean, we've heard the arguments. Can you say Merry Christmas, or do you have to say Happy Holidays? What's Starbucks going to put on their cups this year? Is that going to be some kind of anti-Christmas thing? Well, I mean, there's this cultural push about Christmas. Well, I'm not going to say that's a good thing or a bad thing. I just like to understand why. I just like to ask why. What's behind that? What's going on with that? Because if it's a cultural thing, I can't change that. I just have to kind of understand it. So why would that be? Well, I am at an age where I can remember an era that was different than the culture we live in now. I remember when it made perfect sense to have a nativity on the lawn of the county courthouse. When they would string this banner over Main Street that said, Merry Christmas. Where everybody knew Christmas was a good thing. We're going to celebrate Christmas. We're going to tell anybody and everybody, Merry Christmas. So, if you've seen the movie A Christmas Story... Got some head nods? Okay. A Christmas Story. I'm not that old. But there are certainly things about that culture, where Christmas was just this great thing, even for people who weren't necessarily Christ followers, weren't necessarily churchgoers any time of the year. But Christmas was seen as a good thing, and this sense that God is with us, and that God sent his Son to earth. But now there's this kind of pushback that, well, we can't go that far. We can't talk about those things. But it used to be that our culture pushed people toward church. It pushed people toward church. Now, there are a lot of reasons why that happened. But one of them, I remember being warned as a child in school by our school teachers to be careful about those communists. And they're often described as those godless communists, right? The godless communists. So the best thing you can do is go to church, because we can't be anything like those godless communists. And so the culture, for that and lots of other reasons, pushed people toward church. Well, now there's not that cultural push toward church, if you haven't noticed. There's not a cultural push toward church. I don't know if there's a cultural push toward much of anything, except for individualism. But it's not certainly not toward church. So we just live in a different world these days. Well, some folks will take that change, that different culture we live in, and we have ways we can react about that. We can be angry about it. We can be frustrated about it. There are those who say that we Christians are living in persecution in America. I'll just be real honest. I just don't think that we're under threat of being arrested or having our families executed because we're Christian. I've known people, United Methodists from some countries in Africa, and when they hear us complain and gripe, they say, well, did someone die? Okay, no, no, nobody died in this. We're just frustrated. So I don't know what I'd go as far as saying persecution. However, those earliest Christians that much of the Bible was written to and for were going through persecution. They were living in a culture that certainly did not push people toward church. It tried to repel people from church. So when in this letter of Peter to the church, he was writing to Christians who were in Asia Minor, who now contemporary Turkey, country of Turkey, that region. These were Gentile Christians. So they were not Jewish. They were Gentiles, non-Jews, which means they lived by the culture of their day, which Christians often would call pagan, right? They followed pagan gods. They had pagan practices. So when he says, that ignorance you used to live in, don't live that way anymore. You used to follow the false gods. Now follow the true God. But they lived in a culture that was still under the Roman Empire. Now, certainly, the Romans famously, under Nero, and others, had widespread persecution of Christians. But there were many time periods of the Roman Empire that they didn't. It was not overt persecution, but it was a sense of the culture understanding that if Christians get into a place where they come before a court, well, if anybody came before a court, you had to indicate your allegiance to the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. And that was not Jesus in the Roman Empire. That was Caesar. And so they didn't go out to hunt down the Christians, but if the Christians came to that point, then they would be asked, who is your allegiance to? And if they did not say Caesar, then yes, they could be arrested. So in that culture, try to live as a Christian, right? I mean, that's a different experience than what you and I know. So in this letter of Peter to the Christians, he hits on themes of salvation, themes of hope, themes of suffering, because that's what these folks are going through. And he draws the parallel to Jesus Christ and says, yes, you are going through suffering in this persecution, this culture in which you live. But yes, Jesus did too. Remember, Jesus also suffered. Jesus actually gave his life for us. But then we have hope, because then God raised him from the dead. So in the persecution you're suffering, in the suffering that you have, know that we live with hope, because God is with us just like he was with Jesus in the resurrection. And so we have hope. We have hope. Well, in the Bible, many times hope is expressed through stories of the expectation and the birth of children. I mean, all the way back to Abraham and Sarah, when God said, Abraham, I want you to leave your home, and I'm going to show you the land I want to give you, and I will make you a great nation. Now, Abraham and Sarah were advanced in years. They had never had children, but if he's going to be the great nation, the father of a great nation, there's got to be kids born. So there's the hope, the expectation of a child to be born. Zechariah and Elizabeth were advanced in years. They had a son, named him John, who became known as John the Baptizer. And certainly the expectation of Mary, after the angel told her she would give birth to the Messiah. Hope. Well, in Peter, there's a particular portrayal of a way that hope is lived out, the way hope is expressed, is manifest, and that is in holy living. Now, often we think of holy living as being very restrictive and very not fun, and we think of holy living that way. Well, that's not exactly what it means, because part of what Peter goes on to explain throughout the letter is how to live in a way that makes sense in the culture that they lived. He didn't say be anti-culture. As a matter of fact, he employed some of what were known as household codes, kind of social norms for what it meant to be a family in those days under the Roman Empire. Paul did the same thing. When you read in Ephesians, Colossians, these, you know, so wives act this way, children act this way, masters act this way. Those were household codes. Those were social norms of the day under the Roman Empire. And so Peter employs those too to say, it's okay to kind of live by a lot of those social norms. As long as you understand that by living with this hope into your salvation, your ultimate allegiance is to Jesus Christ and to no one else. So, in order to live that way in this culture that is opposed to, resistant to the notion of the Christian message, he says to prepare your minds for action in verse 13. Now, in my study on this, interestingly, this is one where translators had to make a choice here. But most of the things I looked at all say the more literal translation of this phrase is, gird the loins of your mind for action. Well, now that's not a phrase we use just every day, right? And you think, well, what in the world does that mean? Well, you know, in that ancient world, men wore long flowing clothes. And so when you were going to gird your loins for action, it meant that you took those clothes and you tied them up so that if you needed to run, your legs would not be encumbered by the material. So if you were having to chase down that lamb that was trying to run away, if you were about to be in battle, if you girded your loins, you tied up the robes so they were not in your way. So when he says, prepare your minds for action, he's not just saying, oh, you know, you ought to be ready. He's saying, get ready. This is a big deal. Something big is going to happen. I mean, this is not just a, you ought to, you know, take your time, get ready. No, if you gird your loins, it means something's happening. So gird the loins of your mind, prepare your mind for action to think differently, have a different perspective. Have a different perspective. So when you think of our culture and some of the pushback against Christmas and against Christians and all those things, well, what would it mean to prepare our minds for action in this culture? I mean, we can be cynical and we can be angry and we can shake our fist at everything. Or maybe there's a different way to look at it. How else might we prepare our mind for action that would pair up with holy living as an expression and manifestation of hope? Well, let me tell you about a conversation I had with somebody one time, and then I'm going to kind of try to apply that to this season of Advent as you and I go through our daily lives. So the conversation. I was visiting with a woman one time several years ago. She had spent her career working at hotel and resort properties. And when I say it was a major brand, let's just say, you know, think Hilton, Hyatt, Marriott, those kinds of places. And she would tell me some about her work, and I said, oh, well, as United Methodist, I have to go to a lot of events in other places, and they're almost always at your brand hotel. And she said, oh, well, I bet they hate it when you come. And I thought, well, maybe she didn't understand. And I said, well, I mean, our denomination has a contract. They contract with your brand, and so those are the properties we go to. And she said, oh, yeah, I understand that, but I bet they hate it when you come. And I said, well, okay, so tell me more. She said, well, when we would have our weekly staff meetings and we would go through the schedule of what we had coming up, things we needed to be prepared for, all hands on deck kinds of events, she said, when we would say, here's a block of time where there is a church group coming in, She said there would be an audible groan in the room. And I said, why? Because, right, I mean, we church people are nice, right? We church people want to be around us, right? She said, the church groups that we have typically are the worst tippers. They are the most demanding of any group we have. They are the most hateful group that we work with. And generally, when they leave their rooms, we have more work to do in their rooms after they're gone. And she was being dead serious. Well, there was a part of me that just didn't believe her. Okay, isolated incident, you know, occasions. But part of me thought, man, is that really right? So I just became more and more observant about these things. And so I was at one of these conventions. It was 2008 in Fort Worth, actually, for General Conference. And I got there, like everybody else, all at the same time to check in. So I'm in line, and there are several people ahead of me, and I'm watching people. I'm just really observing people as they interact with the people behind the counter. No, I said, I need two beds. I know, but we're totally booked. All we have is a room with one bed. But no, I want two. I have to have two. Okay. While all that's going on, someone comes up and says, I checked into my room. The air conditioner's not working. Yes, sir. I'll get to it. Just give me a moment. I just began to watch. And I thought, oh, my goodness, it's true. Here's a bunch of United Methodists. And more demanding, hateful. I just thought, wow, somehow we've got to be different than this. Somehow we've got to be different than this. So, okay, so here we are in December. Some people are just abundantly thrilled that it's Christmas time. Others are not. Some understand the reason for the season. Some do not. Some people take offense if you say Merry Christmas. Some do not. Sometimes it's hard to know. So what if you're checking out of a store? That's what we do these days. We go to the store and we buy things. So we buy things and we're checking out, and as they hand you the receipt and you just say, Merry Christmas. And that person, their expression changes. And they just say, well, I just don't really believe in Christmas. Well, we could say, well, happy holidays then. Okay, no, that's not, no, don't do that. Don't do that. Don't be sarcastic. That's not respectful at all, right? I mean, or just say, I'm so sorry, I meant no offense. I hope you have a great day. And just let it be that. I mean, what if when people's unhappiness about things was met with our hope? I mean, if we want the world to be different, it won't be different till we're different. So what if we took on that posture? We prepared our minds for action, knowing that some people are not going to like the things that we say, what we do, what we believe. Okay, that doesn't mean I have to react out of anger. I can be kind and generous and hopeful. I can live into the salvation that God has provided for me and be confident and assured in that.
Thank you for listening to this message from Stonebridge United Methodist Church. You are invited to worship with us every Sunday morning at 9 and 10:30, either in our celebration service, which offers a blended worship style, or in the bridge, which offers contemporary music in a relaxed, rejuvenating environment. For more information, visit our website at mysumc.org. Have a blessed day.